Since 2006, the United States has extradited over a dozen former Colombian paramilitary members, only to seal the records of their court cases. Joining us to explain why are Jennifer Janisch and Oriana Zil de Granados. They discovered the situation while working for PBS's Wide Angle series, which is produced here in New York by WNET. They also collaborated with ProPublica's Chisholm Lee, for an investigation that appeared in the Washington Post earlier this month. I'm very pleased that they could join me today for our second underreported segment. Hello.
Hello.
Oriana, how did your work for Wide Angle lead you to discover that seven of these cases had been sealed?
Well, as part of our reporting for the documentary series Women, War, and Peace, we were looking at potential people to interview, and these paramilitary leaders we knew had all been extradited to the United States. So we were actually following their cases on PACER, and which is the electronics record system that the U.S. uses to track federal cases, and anyone really has access to this system. And so we were looking through the records, and one day in May, we noticed that a bunch of the records had disappeared, literally disappeared from PACER. And I've been an investigative reporter for 15 years, and I've dealt with the system a lot, and I had never seen that before. So I was stunned, and I didn't actually realize that a case could be sealed in such a way.
Does this reflect a new policy?
No, it doesn't. It actually, this practice of total secrecy has been used off and on in the history and today, and it's generally used for various different reasons. I mean, secrecy is used to protect cooperating witnesses. It's also used for national security, as we've all heard a lot about, and it's also used in various other instances.
So this happened recently. Do we know who might have decided to use this? Is this something that comes out of new Obama administration policies?
No, actually, this is the ultimately it's the judge's decision. And so Judge Reggie Walton at the D.C. federal court was the ultimate person who decided that the cases could be fully sealed, which is different from just sealing a document.
Roxana Altholz, a lawyer who's representing family members of some of the Columbia victims, estimated that 18 of the files were incomplete. Does that mean that that all of those files have been sealed?
Yes. we've looked, I think, at 40 cases of paramilitary leaders in the U.S. And of those, I would say the majority are sealed in some fashion. These seven were sealed in a way, as I said, that I hadn't seen before, where they were actually removed fully from the public record, which means that anyone who is following those cases, such as the victims, will never, unless they're unsealed by the judge and the prosecuting attorneys and the defense attorneys, no one will ever be able to know what sentence these men are given.
Jennifer, the men were members of AUC, the Self-Defense Forces of Colombia. Who are they?
So the Self-Defense Forces of Colombia rose up about 30 years ago in the 1980s. They rose up to fight the FARC, which are the left-leaning rebels in Colombia. The military was pretty weak at the time, and so these were private armies that very elite, rich landowners funded, and some individuals even formed them themselves to come together to fight the FARC because the military was so weak.
How do they compare to other paramilitary groups? More violent, less violent?
Well, I think most paramilitary groups are known for their violence around the world, but in Colombia it's particularly disturbing, the level of violence that they perpetrated. I mean, you hear about the Chainsaw Massacre. That was a reality in Colombia under the reign of the paramilitaries.
And are they still active, the AUC?
They are, and one of the reasons why they are still active is because of this extradition.
Well, how did they wind up being taken into custody?
Into U.S. custody?
Well, custody in the first place.
In Colombia.
Did they give themselves up?
What they did was there was a kind of a historic amnesty program that was set forth in Colombia called Justice and Peace, Justicia y Paz. This was implemented because the paramilitaries had gotten so out of control and were killing so many people, and it was a way to provide reconciliation and truth in Colombia. So when that happened, many paramilitaries turned themselves in and laid down their arms in exchange for lenient jail sentences and other benefits. So many of them started participating in confession sessions, versiones libres, and they started telling some horrific truths about the crimes they'd committed. They also started talking about their ties to business elites in Colombia, to politicians and other very powerful people.
Why were they extradited to the United States in 2008? It would seem to me that this process was supposed to allow them to confess and then be freed.
Exactly. And that's part of the problem. They were extradited because the U.S. has long wanted them for narco-trafficking. Paramilitaries turned to narco-trafficking to fund their operations. But it did impede.
So we don't care if they kill people with chainsaws, but we are concerned if they were involved in cocaine trafficking.
Well, victims' advocates have said that that's kind of the message the U.S. government has been sending, yes.
Yeah, I mean, fundamentally, I'd say most Colombians were shocked and very, very upset when these extraditions took place. Many, many experts there and people I've talked to here in the United States inside justice circles say that the extradition happened primarily because the president at the time, Alvaro Uribe, felt threatened by some of the truths that were being revealed by the paramilitaries.
Well, in one of the videotaped confessions, a paramilitary leader took responsibility for 450 slayings. That's an awful lot of victims. Who were the victims of their violence? Were they mostly FARC members?
No, unfortunately. They, as I said, they rose up to fight the FARC, but a lot of innocent people got caught in the middle of this. And that's what happens. And that's kind of what our series, Women, War, and Peace, is about. Now more than ever, war has changed and civilians are getting caught in the middle. One of them I can tell you about, her name is Bella Enriquez. She's 26 years old, and her father, Julio, was killed because he was organizing peasants in the Magdalena region of Colombia to stop growing coca. This, of course, threatened the control of the paramilitary leader in that region, and he ordered him killed. So he confessed to that crime in his confession sessions. He said that he had ordered it, but then he was extradited, and he could no longer tell the truth about what happened and why or where the body was buried, for instance. And that's what victims want to know more than anything.
So because the everything is sealed in this country, the people back in Colombia can't learn what really happened.
Yeah. And it's I think that people in Colombia are particularly upset, not only because they can't learn what happened to their family members, but because this important historic process was interrupted. They're also upset, frankly, because the United States is charging these men with drug charges, sometimes as much as little. I mean, even though drug charges are a very serious crime, they're not the same as this war crimes, crimes against humanity, murder, disappearance. Horrific things that these men did in Colombia. They're not paying for those crimes.
Well, was the Justice and Peace Program set up to be similar to the Truth and Reconciliation Commissions that we've seen in South Africa and Rwanda and other countries that have had serious violent conflicts?
Yeah, I mean, the system in Colombia was set up that way. Many people think that there have been serious failings in the system, but I think the most serious failing in everyone's mind is the fact that they no longer have full access to the men who have been extradited to the United States.
And were the people who participated in this program mostly members of the AUC, or were members of other paramilitary organizations also involved?
The AUC was kind of an umbrella organization for the paramilitary. So, yes, it was predominantly paramilitaries. Yes.
What reason was given for sealing the records here in the United States, Ariana?
Well, that's the interesting thing about this whole process. Obviously, there must have been a hearing in federal court to determine whether the case should be sealed. But because this case is sealed, the reasons for sealing the case are also sealed. So no one, no journalist, no victim, no one will ever know the true reason why it was sealed. We have sources from within this process who have told us that these cases were sealed because we are protecting, as cooperating witnesses, these paramilitary leaders. And that in itself is very problematic. We are actually protecting cooperators rather than protecting the witnesses.
Usually
when
we seal these kinds of things, we say the reason is national security, but that's not the case here.
Well, actually, the AUC is classified as a terrorist organization under the U.S. And so both the AUC and the FARC are classified as terrorist organizations.
Now, this story is barely known in this country. What about in Colombia?
Well, it's been a very important story in Colombia, the fact that these guys were extradited to the United States. And now, you know, since our investigation was published for PBS and for the Washington Post with ProPublica, it's become an even bigger story, I think. It's taken on a different level in Colombia. Victims and their advocates are absolutely outraged. They knew that these extraditions would impede the judicial process, that these paramilitaries were participating in. But now that many of their cases are disappeared and sealed, they virtually have no way of tracking them, and they really don't think they'll ever achieve justice in Colombia now.
Ariana, is there a certain irony in the fact that the United States may have wanted these men tried in a stronger judicial system, but that the victims of their crimes back in Colombia may have a harder time getting justice?
Well, that's an interesting point, because the United States gives billions of dollars to Colombia in support as part of Plan Colombia. And we fundamentally, as part of that, one of the processes that we've tried to do is to improve the justice system in Colombia. And, you know, there is an argument that if they're extradited to the United States, they'll be in more secure, more tough jails for longer sentences. Now that the cases are sealed, however, we don't know how long those sentences may be. And because they're cooperating, they may, in fact, be negotiating quite lenient sentences. We know for a fact that one of these people is already out on the streets living in the United States somewhere. We cannot get access to his case because it is sealed.
The series that you've been working on for Wide Angle is called Women, War, and Peace in Colombia. Earlier, we talked to Ann Jones about what happens to women in areas of conflict, for example, rape and things that affect their lives way past the time that the conflict ends. Are you talking about something similar happening in Colombia?
Yes. We are the story that we're following that will air in next April on PBS nationwide as part of the Women, War, and Peace series is really trying to look at war through the perspective of women and women who are on the ground experiencing it. And we believe that war has fundamentally changed since the end of the Cold War, and that victims, mostly women and children, are now caught in between either powerful forces or, frankly, armed thugs.
Well, they're targeted as well.
And they are targeted.
And recently we spoke to Ingrid Betancourt about the role that women are expected to play in some of these guerrilla organizations, which
yes.
is subservient.
Yes. I mean, that's a very interesting story. And we also found that there were widespread rapes in Colombia, and it hasn't been fully reported.
We thank the two of you for being with us today, Oriana Zil de Granados and Jennifer Janish. We've been talking about what they discovered while they were preparing a segment for the Wide Angle series of public television. Their article appeared in Washington Post earlier this month. It's been a pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
On tomorrow's show, John Thompson, who spent 18 years on death row, joins us to discuss his long road to exoneration, along with litigator John Holloway. And then historian Min Guy tells the story of a family of Chinese immigrants who were instrumental in integrating California schools in the 1880s. Also, John Kanemaker of NYU's Tisch School of Arts on two of the great creative forces in early animation, Joe Grant and Joe Ranft. Plus, Please Explain is all about rubber. The Leonard Lopate Show is produced by Blakeney Schick, Stephen Valentino, and Julia Corcoran. Melissa Egan is the executive producer, and we had help today from Adi Brown, Matt Gurry, and Christina Maldonado. Debbie Fountain was at the audio controls. I'm Leonard Lopate, your host. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you tomorrow.